Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future. Living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, QT and Sign Guy with you here on another Friday afternoon, kicking off Dan Month this month on the show. Have a great guest. He's going to be delayed for a little while calling in. I just spoke with him. He should be calling in hopefully in the next 20 minutes or so. But if you're looking for some professional wrestling to start, WCWO running tonight as usual at the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana. SCW running the first of three shows in the next couple of days tonight at La Pablanitas in Bremerton, Washington. Tomorrow night, SCW returning for two big shows in Bremerton. Also, we have HPW in Columbus, Indiana. Emerge also there in Columbus tomorrow. You have tomorrow WCWC in Portland. NWWA also happening in Portland. And lots of great action, lots of shows going on this week. So if you're near a show, definitely make sure that you are out there supporting. Should be a great week for pro wrestling. I believe, besides myself and QG, we have someone else with us. Well, maybe not. Okay.
Oh, okay.
QT should be a big weekend coming up.
Big weekend, Sign Guy, and a little bit of controversy out there over this week's top 9 and 7/16 Northwest Wrestler rankings. Looks like Sunny Days have returned to that coveted number 1 spot.
I believe, despite the fact that this has happened multiple times, it's the debut of her being back-to-back number 1. Am I correct?
No, Sign Guy, you're mistaken. She was ranked number 1 3 weeks ago, and then she dropped down to number 5, and then she recaptured the number 1 spot.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now that means she will be awarded yet another fruit pie, am I correct?
Yes, another fruit pie. And I don't know how, but Laren, Golden Songbird Amos, had insider information and guessed for on the first try what the flavor of said fruit pie, that was blackberry, and was awarded to Sunny Days was. She got it right off the bat. What's the odds of that?
Well, she had inside information pretty high. I'm going to guess her inside source was Kevin Brandt.
I see. Yes, Kevin Brandt might have leaked the information, yes. As you know, Sign Guy, at Blue Collar Wrestling, it's usually partitioned. And the wrestlers have that main floor near the bar, and when they have received moon pies or fruit pies in the past, a lot of the other wrestlers gather around, and there's a mini celebration.
Is that a Mini Beast reference?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Now, QT, can you confirm where number 9 and 15 16th through number 6 is?
Oh, okay. Well, let me see. I kind of forgot myself. Let me see if I can bring that up. Yes. Let me see here. Let's see. Should be in a logbook somewhere, yes.
You would hope.
Yes. I think Lou Fisto may have made an appearance, yes.
Really?
Yes. Now, it was another arduous journey of a nightmare, I can tell you that, posting it, yes. I agonize over these lists.
Does the heart rate tend to accelerate when typing out the list?
Yes, it does, Sign Guy, and I'd like to... Now, I pointed this out to you before. Do you know what Jim Ryan's resting pulse was when he was in top shape? Jim Ryan being one of our most famous milers in the history of track and field.
I'm going to say 28.
Oh, no, not that low. 38.
I wasn't too far from it.
Yes. Well, Sangay, as you know, the heart is like a muscle, and the more you exercise it, the more efficient it becomes. Now, it's like an engine. The more you work it and the better amount of oil that you put in it, it's like a heart, it's like a pump. Now, a lot of times, well, it's a muscle. The more you strengthen it and work it out, the more blood it can pump with the least amount of effort. So it doesn't have to beat as many times per minute, but it pumps the same amount of blood.
True. Now, have you ever got your resting pulse down to 38?
I think the best I ever had was 48.
I'm going to guess this was in 1993. I'm going to say July 8th.
No, now probably not, Sign Guy, because what did you say, 93?
Yes, July 8th.
This is when I was stationed in Virginia aboard the Coast Guard cutter Bear, and at least while I was working, my resting pulse never hit that low.
I see. Yes. All right.
Now, Sangay, will you be at La Problemita's in tomorrow in Bremerton, Washington?
I personally won't be there, but I know there are two big shows. Chief Attakulakula coming back to town.
And will that be at SCW on the tribal reservation?
That will be at La Poblanita's.
Oh, and you won't be at La Poblanita's?
I personally won't be there, but should be two big shows, lots of good talent going to be on hand, including the chief. So I encourage everyone to make their way over to Bremerton if they're in the area. Lots of good shows happening in the Northwest in general. Lots of the promotions running in WWA. Also have Saul running tomorrow over in Spokane. You have WCWC with another TV taping in Portland. Lots of great action around the Pacific Northwest tomorrow.
Would you be at the WCWC in Portland?
Unlikely.
I see. Now, at the time of these wrestling events, will you be skipping them and go to the Grateful Bread instead to get a bagel?
That could be.
Oh, okay. Well,
QT, have you ever considered taking a bagel there? But I believe we have our guest. Let's bring him on right away. Do we have Mr. Dan Severn with us?
You've got me.
Well, Mr. Severn, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for taking the time to be here.
Well, that's quite all right. It's been a chaotic day.
I completely understand. I've had those myself. Now, since today is your first time on our particular show, we're going to give you our traditional first-timers question. What led you to get into the professional wrestling industry?
Well, I'll tell you what. The comedic, the comical line would be, well, I couldn't sing and I can't dance, so I had to go a different route. So that went over like a load. So we'll go on to the next aspect of it right there. I had been watching professional wrestling, to my junior high years and probably early high school years. And it was every Sunday afternoon, big time wrestling with the Sheik, Bobo Brazil, that type of stuff. And my brothers and I used to just grab each other, airplane spin, body slam each other onto a couch, broke a few springs of the couch, took out a table lamp here or there, and just kind of got the bug. I was approached by some professional wrestling, smaller independent companies through the mid-80s, but I did not turn pro at that point in time. But as of the 1992 Olympics, a new rule came down from the Olympic Committee that allowed athletes to be both amateur and professional simultaneously, as long as you weren't involved with a collegiate program or a high school athletic association program, because you're still either governed by NCAA rules or your high school athletic association rules. So I was well past my collegiate eligibility, so I could have my cake and eat it too.
You were a very accomplished amateur wrestler as well. When you got into professional wrestling, did you find that having that extensive of an amateur base made the transition easier for you than if you hadn't had an amateur experience and started professional wrestling training without it?
No, I'd say just the opposite. For the fact that I had such extensive background that it made it a lot more difficult for me, because you had realized for 20 some odd years, when I looked across that mat, I saw an opponent, and I focused in on an opponent, and you did not have to listen to the crowd and how they're reacting to things. To me, it's like I was so focused that I never heard the crowd. I could block them all together. I didn't even see the referee. There was just an opponent. So that's a big difference from amateur wrestling. Now take that over to the professional wrestling world. Now you have a partner. It's working together to put on an entertainment product, and you have to listen to the fans. What are they fighting on? Because different parts of the country, different types of reaction that you're going to get. So you kind of have to listen to them. And then the other aspect of working light. And I've always been known to work rather snug. Somebody would say rather stiff, but I try to tell them all the time afterwards, I go, no, it's actually pretty light for me. You should see. I said, if you want to see snug, you should see me in my shoot base.
I can imagine that. Now, you were the NWA World Champion for quite some time in the 90s, and I'm sure you had a lot of experiences in the NWA working with the various promoters at the time. Do you follow very much what the NWA of today is doing?
No, I don't follow what it does, but even just to educate your audience just a little bit more, when I first came on board, or I should say when Dennis Carluzzo came up with the idea to put the strap on me, there were only three promoters left in the world that were supporting NWA. So through getting exposure through the Ultimate Fighter Championships and that, by the time I left, relinquished the strap, there were 35 promoters strong inside the United States, on top of now you had a number of other countries that were hosting various championship bouts with the NWA altogether. So I kind of revived that company. It was, I would say, for all intents and purposes, near extinction before I took on this draft.
While you were NWA World Champion, you also started making appearances in what was then the WWF as the NWA Champion. Were you privy to any type of plan as far as what that the NWA wanted to do with the WWF, if anything, as far as promoting the NWA as a brand?
No, they were being, you know, Jim Cornette was already there. There was already viewership of the NWA belt. And, you know, when I came on board, and the WWF really did not know what to do with me. And a lot of it, what I think is, let's back up a little bit. They used me quite well, quite strong in the very beginning. And I think somewhere along the line, they realized that they had no control mechanisms over me, meaning that I was the very first, and as far as I know, still am, the only non-exclusive wrestler ever in their history. All of the so-called stars of Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Undertaker, The Rock, they were all under the contract. They were bought and paid for by Vince. And me, I had a contract that I could work for anybody. I was already working for 35 promoters by the time, you know, that it hit on that portion. There's 35 promoters in the United States alone that I was working for the NWA. On top of, I could have worked for WCW or the ECW because they both existed at that time. But at the same token, you know, Vince McMahon and the WWF officials did not know what kind of a person I am. And to me, it's like the common sense thing is, do you bite the hand that feeds you? An intelligent person would not. But I would say that in the industry of professional wrestling, they don't always, it doesn't always draw the sharpest knives in the drawer.
Now, at the time that you were in the WWF, for someone in your position, was it easy to get an audience with Vince McMahon if you had wanted to do so? Was he approachable by the talent, or did you have to go through a lot of channels and talk to people him?
I would have went direct. There wouldn't have been no channels. But at the same token, I did not need to be babysit by anyone. I was the oldest rookie ever. They didn't even realize how old I was at the time until after the contracts had been signed and in the office, and just through the idle conversation between Jim Ross, Vince McMahon, and myself, and all of a sudden Vince even himself, he said, "Well, how old are you?" And I told him, he looked over at Jim and goes, he says, "Who's our oldest rookie ever?" And Jim just pointed right back at me and said, "Dan is, but I don't look my age, nor do I act."
Now, in professional wrestling, the last several years, there's been a lot of controversy as far as how much blood there should be in the business. A lot of promotions still use matches that will show a lot of blood in it. WWE has pretty much eliminated blood being shown on their programs as much as possible. Where is your stance as far as it relates to blood and how it fits into professional wrestling?
Well, to me, I mean, does that make any impact on me whatsoever? No, I came from the world of cage fighting as well. So, well, who should say that? I was first a professional wrestler, then I jumped into the wacky world of cage fighting. And then I went out to have a dual career until most people really only saw me on visually speaking, on the professional level with when I went working for the WWF. But did the blood portion ever bother me? No, not whatsoever, because if you ever see what the Ultimate Fighting Championship was all about, bloodletting was pretty commonplace.
Very true, especially in the early days of the UFC, I think.
Yes, the no-holds-barred era, which most Americans are very short-minded on this kind of stuff. They forget as forgetful as yesterday's news. So they just live with mixed martial arts, and there's roughly the 41 rules that pertain to it. And back in the day of the no rules barred, there were only the two rules of no biting, no eye gouging. End of the rules. No weight classes, no time periods, bare knuckles, and you had the 8-man tournaments. A whole different, set of criteria altogether.
I'm sure over the course of your career you've encountered a very large number of fans and have had lots of experiences, good and bad, with the fans. Do you have any particular favorite moment that you had with a fan, something that sticks out as a really good experience with one of your fans?
No, I didn't say that voice, but too well. I've never really, can't say I really had any bad experiences with fans.
That's a great thing to have during the course of a career.
No, it is. I'd say that, if anything, a lot of people were standoffish because they did not know how to approach me. That's what I've been to. There is various mixed martial arts expos, or I've been to professional signings and stuff like that. And out of the corner of my eye, I can see a couple guys will be talking, they'll be pointing over towards me and stuff like that. Then when I look over towards them, I mean, they don't even want to make eye contact with me. And then I'll engage them in conversation. I wave mine over. I go, I don't bite. And they come on over, start talking. And it's usually the statement would be something like, you're not at all like we would thought you would be. I go, well, is that a good thing or a bad thing? They go, well, no, it's a great thing. You know, just we're afraid that you'd be like some grumpy, blah, 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 mean, all that kind of stuff. I go, competition, most people have never seen me as a competitor or an entertainer. They don't really know who I am.
At this point, my co-host QT is standing by. I know that he also has some questions, so I'm going to pass things over to him for a bit.
All right.
Well, thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, Ben.
How are we doing, QT?
I'm doing pretty good. Dan, I saw your YouTube video entitled Bobby Blaze versus Dan Severn, and this took place at the Grady Cole Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. Is North Carolina one of your favorite states to wrestle in, or was it?
Wow, I mean, just you took me back in time there. I mean, it's ironic that just 2 days ago, I was in both North and South Carolina. And in the last 4 days, I've covered a lot of ground doing a multitude of different things. But it had, none of it had to do with professional wrestling. It had to do with either teaching something with mixed martial arts or amateur wrestling and autograph signing and appearance. But I would say that a lot more the southern states, that they appreciate good old-fashioned wrestling, whereas if you go back up into some of the eastern, northeastern type states, they're a little bit more in a little bit more hardcore type of aspect of some matches. Depends on where you're at. That's what what they're going to react to.
Oh, all right, okay. I have heard that different areas of the country have different attitudes toward wrestling, hence the way the fans react. If you take fans in the Northwest here, they probably react a little bit differently than the fans in Philadelphia or New York.
That's where, to talk about like back east, that's sort of what I was referring to, because I've done a lot of matches in the New Jersey or New York area. That is definitely a crowd that likes to see a lot more action.
Now, North Carolina has the Outer Banks, an area known for its fierce storms, and they have a Coast Guard station out there. And I believe North Carolina also has Camp Lejeune for the Marines. Have you ever had a lot of appearances on Navy, Coast Guard, or Army bases in North Carolina?
Yes. Well, I mean, not necessarily for just North Carolina, but I mean, I've done a lot of things on military bases, just because of what my background is, most people don't really realize I've been working with law enforcement since 94, I've worked with the corrections since 95, and so from all that, I work with Air Marshal, Border Patrol, and military. Ironic part is I have never been any of the above, but I look like one of them because I have a Dudley Do-Right chin and a mustache.
Oh, Dudley Do-Right, okay. Well, that was a cartoon back in the early 70s. Did he ever have a name for his horse?
Oh, actually, he did.
But I don't think his horse was ever named. I don't think so.
Oh. I guess that'd be the first time that's ever come up in a conversation.
Well, we like to ask the existential questions here on Turnbuckle Turmoil. That's true. Yes. Well, that's your homework assignment, Dan. I'd like you to do some research and see if horse had a name. Yes.
I won't be doing that one unless I just have to be sitting in front of my laptop there and I even remember that. But I keep a rather busy schedule, and my voice might sound a little bit tired right now because sleep deprivation has really been the key theme here in the last 4 days.
All right. Okay. Well, you can put that, find out Dudley Do-Right's horse name on the back burner. Yes. All right.
I appreciate that.
Well, now, if you had a chance to be in virtual reality animation, how do you think you would have done in an MMA match against Snidely Whiplash?
Well, it would have been obviously a kind of like a luchador type match in the sense that it would be, instead of a mask versus a mask, it would have been stash versus stash.
All right. Okay, you'd probably put your mustache on the line. Very intriguing.
Exactly. Yes. But it has to be held during the month of November, a.k.a. Movember.
Oh, okay. Wow, all right. Well, Dan, in that match with Bobby Blaze, the announcer said that the match would be for a one-hour time limit. In your wrestling MMA career, have you ever wrestled anyone to a one-hour time limit draw? And if not, have any of your matches approached the 50-minute mark?
In professionals, no. The closest I can even say, and that it was never in professional wrestling, but in mixed martial arts at the event, the very first time that they ever held the, it was called the Ultimate. And that was when they brought back various champions, and they brought back various runner-ups. And out of a two-hour pay-per-view, I was inside of that octagon cage just over 1 hour.
Oh, wow.
And to add a little bit more, that was in Denver, Colorado, mile-high elevation.
Wow, how much weight did you lose during that match?
Well, again, it wasn't one match. It was between my three opponents because I had a total of three matches. You know, one match went 30-some-odd minutes, one match went 20-some-odd minutes, and one match went only a couple minutes. My longest to date single match was 40 minutes, so that was in Brazil.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Ooh, boy.
So I have put some time in a few matches, yeah.
Wow. All right. Okay. I'm going to mark that down in our logbook. Okay. All right.
And those are all underneath the rules of no holds barred, too. Nobody, no idols, and that was it.
Wow. No holds barred. Okay. Ooh. Okay. Well, when you mentioned the word ultimate, that reminded me of Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Did you ever have a chance to meet Ricky the Dragon Steamboat?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. All right. A man who was much admired and appreciated in the world of wrestling. Yes. Okay. Well, now, Dan, the ref did a good job at checking your hands and the bottom of your boots, but he did not check Bobby Blaze. You didn't seem to be too concerned about this. Had you wrestled Bobby before?
I don't believe so. I think that was the first time we ever encountered one another.
Oh, okay. All right, first time. Okay. Did you ever have a chance to wrestle Abdullah the Butcher?
No, I've been on cards with him. You know, one of the craziest ones was being on a card with the Insane Clown Posse.
Oh, okay. Ooh. Wow.
And let's put it this way. You know, after watching Abdullah the Butcher match, I'll say that bloodletting is definitely in the cards. I mean, not only will his partner bleed, most times even the referee will be bleeding.
Wow. Well, in this match that you had with the Insane Clown Posse, did you make any of the posse bleed? Insane Clown Posse's bleed.
Okay. Are you asking if he did?
Yeah, if you made any of the clowns
no,
bleed,
no,
yes.
I did not have a match with them. They were hosting an event at one of their gatherings.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that. Okay.
I was on the card. It was an Insane Clown Posse show. It was at one of their gatherings, and that was a very bizarre, kind of like Twilight Zone encounter. For the fact that you go to a show that's out in the middle of Timbuktu, you've got all the state police that are there pulling every car over en route to the thing. I mean, literally, you're asking people to step out of their vehicles, they're popping trunks. I'm thinking, this is going to take a long time. As I approached, I rolled the window down, expecting the same thing to happen to me. And the officer just looked at me and just waved. Start up there, and I'll be right back. I'm trying to make good use of my time. Sorry about that. I'm actually at a Sprint store because I'm having some issues with the screen and the... gentleman that was helping me just came back out.
Oh, all right. No problem. No problem with that. Okay. Insane Clown Posse. Okay. Now, that reminds me, when the police pulled you over or the state highway, have you ever seen the movie?
Well, no. Okay. Think of it as a road check, where literally the road is just, it's shut down. And as each vehicle is approaching it, they're eyeballing and they're searching these vehicles, stuff like this. And as I had finally made it up to that area, they just waved me right on through. And even when I finally made it to the front gate of this so-called campgrounds, you know, the guy who comes out with the clipboard, you know, I roll the window down, and takes one look at me and goes, "You don't belong here." And I said, "You might want to look at that clipboard." I go, "I'm supposed to be doing a speaking engagement at 1 o'clock, and then be wrestling later on in the evening on the card." And he looked at me and goes, "By God, you're right."
Oh, all right. Wow. Okay.
Well, I mean, it's a very interesting encounter because these are people that I see more screwed up looking people, or what are they known as? They're known as the Juggalos. Yeah, the Juggalo clan is a very interesting clan.
Oh, now the Juggalo clan, do you know if they've ever appeared at the Burning Man Festival out in Nevada?
I could not tell you that one. I think you have to have them on and interview them to find out if they've ever done something like that.
Oh, all right. Well, you know, they have the Parrot Heads, and they follow that, who's that singer that sings down in the Florida Keys? The Parrot Heads.
I know what you're talking about with the Burning Man. I know what you're talking about there, but
yeah, he has that song "Cheeseburger in Paradise."
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, I forget his name. Boy, I forgot. And then there's the Deadheads that used to follow the Grateful Dead around. Yes. Okay. Well, Dan, in your match with Bobby Blaze, he tried to kick your left times to open up the match. Is there one MMA artist that has managed to, or did manage to kick your thigh more than 10 times in a match? And if so, did you begin losing feeling and control in that leg?
Well, I've been in a number of matches where the duration of the bout, taken quite a few strikes in the process. I try to give more than I ever receive. I know being in Japan specifically, the very first time I ever went over and worked with a company, the UWFI, my Asian opponent kicked me half a dozen times very, very hard. I did not like being kicked like that, so I closed the distance, grabbed him, and did this aerial assault launch onto him, much to the crowd's delight, dismantling him in the process. So, and even the Japanese interpreter said, he's like, you know, and there's a Japanese type of accent, there's that down to mount, you will become superstar. In Japan, I go, I don't know about that superstar. I said, I'm not going to let anyone just cut loose on me like that. So that was really early on in my career. That was early in my career, and I had not not done anything with the mixed martial arts world or with the Ultimate Fighting Company at all at that time.
Wow. Well, following the match, how black and blue was your thigh, and did you have to ice it for a couple hours?
Not normally will it be immediately black and blue. Usually, I'd say black and blue marking will appear by the following day. You'll be bruised. You'll be bruised up feeling. You'll be a little bit. You know, you'll be sore or something like this. But did I ice myself? So I iced myself. I even took aspirin that night to make sure that the blood was thin, so that I would not have to worry about any kind of blood clot.
Yeah, but I'm sure all that is a lot of broken capillaries. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right.
I don't know how many professionals even realize about what you're talking about there, or realize about taking aspirin and things of that nature in order to thin out the blood. I've been an athlete my entire life, you know, going from the ranks of amateur wrestler, professional wrestler, cage fighter, and so I've been around, you know, doctors and around trainers, so I picked up quite a bit along the way. Probably part of why I've had such a long, vast career.
Yes, and you were, I don't think you were ever one after the matches to go out and party with the boys. That takes its toll.
Yes, it does. I've already outlived 3 or 4 of my cage fighting opponents and almost 30 of my professional wrestling partners, and none of them were older than me.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah, it is. Wrestling and the lifestyle does take its toll. Yes.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Well, Dan, you know what, caught my eye in that match with Bobby Blaze is your single leg takedown at the 321 mark, followed by a fireman's carry. And it kind of answered my last question. You went to Arizona State University. Were you on the wrestling team there?
Yes, I was born and raised in Michigan. I went to Arizona State on a full athletic scholarship. And, yes, I had a very very stellar career throughout my amateur wrestling career.
Oh, well, okay. Did you ever have a chance to meet Dan Gable?
Yes, multiple times. Been at Iowa University multiple times, just at various camps that took place prior to heading off to various either NMF or championships or
Well, all right. Well, as you know, Dan Gable went undefeated through college except for his last match when he lost to a University of Washington wrestler.
Yep.
Were you aware of Cale Sanderson, who recently, well, not recently, I think about 5 years ago, went through his NCAA career without a loss and four NCAA championships. Yes.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, amateur wrestling is my world. You can talk to me all about that, and I can tell you stuff left and right there. Whereas, you know, professional wrestling, no. Yeah, only because I just don't watch a lot of television. Period.
Okay.
That's nothing against the industry. I just don't watch a lot of television. Okay, like even a classic example is the Ultimate Fighter Championships. I never watched it in the first place. It was brought by someone else. I jumped into it. I never watched it while I did it. And even now, do I watch it? Nope. But when I had matches, oh, I definitely would seek out video or try to find clips on the internet. You know, but you got to be high when it first began. Those type of that type of accessibility, the internet did not exist the way it does today. With each progressive year, you know, there's just more bells, buzzers, and whistles. All of that stuff. So right now it's easy to find almost anybody. I'll find footage on a person.
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. It is pretty easy. I spend many hours prepping for the show by watching. Yes. But you know, Dan, you made him tap out at the 6:15 mark. And after the match, in a good show of sportsmanship, he shook your hand, gave you a hug, and then took the belt from the referee and handed it to you, and he raised your hand, and he also gave you another handshake. He even shook your hand at the opening bell of the match. My question is, can you tell us of any matches that stick out in your mind where you met maybe a Bobby Blaze antithesis, perhaps a wrestler who refused to shake your hand after losing to you and then tried to run away with a belt? Yes.
Well, I'll say that, sure, I've been involved in matches where sportsmanship was never going to be involved. But, you know, I think I've actually been involved in matches where they were going to try to take the belt and use it as a weapon. To be bashed across the head or something like that with it. But I've been very fortunate, though, that none of it has ever really come to fruition.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Dan, is it true that you had a cameo appearance in the Notre Dame football movie Rudy along with Al Snow?
Yeah, actually, I'm the person that actually helped get Al Snow and I think four other wrestlers involved in that movie. A friend of mine who was a coach at one of the local colleges up in Kalamazoo, Michigan, when the Notre Dame, the movie crew for Rudy was trying to find ex-football players. They could not use current NCAA players because of the NCAA rules. So they were looking for ex-football players. Well, I just happened to have played part of a semi-pro, played on team for just a couple games with the semi-pro football team. So it was fresh in this guy's name, and I was of a good size and stuff like that. So that's how I actually got involved with that movie. And for almost 3 months, I practically lived down in South Bend, Indiana, while they were shooting with the various scenes. So it was actually it was the easiest job I've ever had in my life. But most of the time, I was simply sit around waiting for the film crew to set up their lights, set up their cameras, and wait for this, wait for that. And it was just a bunch of sitting around. I brought stuff to read, stuff to do, because I like to make use of my time.
Wow, all right. Okay, interesting. Okay. Well, Dan, did you ever send Tom Selleck a clip of your performance in Rudy, hoping you could get a cameo appearance with him in one of his movies?
Say that again.
Did you ever send Tom Selleck a clip of your performance in Rudy?
No, I gotta say no. It's that's pretty comical because, you know, I'd say when yeah, I've had a lot of references to, yeah, that Hector Bob went to pass for one of his brothers or something like that at one point in time. But, you know, I think that time has kind of come and gone now.
Oh,
well, gentlemen, we have another caller. Let's see if we have someone with a question. We got the caller from the 425.
Yeah, this is Godfan Nurse Sage Truth. I was literally just calling to listen in. But since you got me here, I want to tell you, Dan B7, you are clearly the man. Big fan, big fan.
I appreciate that.
Well, sir, it's only truth. I mean, you the first time I had the privilege to see you in action was around what is considered to be probably the greatest era in wrestling. That many of us know very well. Yes, indeed.
Yes, Attitude Era. Yeah, you bet.
Yes,
I think it was probably the best time in the sense that, you know, WCW was kicking WWF's butt, you know, for like 52 or 54 weeks straight. And that was probably the last true time that WWF really put forth a great deal of effort to try to beat the competition where they kind of, you know, I'll say kind of just don't have that same drive. I don't see them really pushing the envelope anymore the way that they once did.
And you know, just from you saying that, you know, I'm interpreting, and you're more than welcome to clarify me. By pushing the envelope, you're not just talking about all the so-called sexual stuff that went on. You're talking about in terms of the actual wrestling. That went on in storyline, am I correct?
Exactly. Because, I mean, you know, bottom line, the marquee still says wrestling, professional wrestling, not just professional, let's stand on and pose and cut promos or something like that. You got a bunch of bodybuilders that they can do that kind of stuff there for you. But, you know, I liked it when there used to be some characters, bigger than life characters. But you really don't have that right now. I think if they went a little bit back to some of that, you know, they would probably bring even more of an audience back to them.
I know it sounds like I'm stuttering because I'm still a fan of the business. So being able to talk to you, I won't lie, I'm a fanboy right now because my roommate and I, we was just literally just talking about you and for you to be on this broadcast is just top of the line awesome. So thank you absolutely for taking time to come on the Turnbuckle Turmoil. I mean it's really awesome.
I appreciate that. That kind of just goes right back to what you know, I was saying a little bit earlier. That see, a lot of people they just don't know what type of person I really am and what I've done, you know what my background has come from. But you know, even when I worked at the WWF, a lot of the wrestlers were nervous around me. Even the first few weeks when the wrestlers would encounter each other, they would either be referring to each other by their first name or by their ring name. For example,
right.
They would say, hey, Steve, or hey, Austin, or, you know, or they'd be, hey, Taker, or hey, Mark, or, so that's, you know, a couple examples of, you know, but every time that they saw me, you know, or encountered me, it was always, oh, and how are you today, Mr. Severn? It was always Mr. Severn. After a few, I didn't really pay much attention to it for the first few weeks, but then afterwards, I happened to be in one of the locker rooms, and the same thing happened again, and it's just a one-on-one type of a, account, and I just asked the other wrestler, I said, well, why is it that you guys, you know, do it one way, then another way for myself? And he just looks at me, he goes, dude, he says, you're from the real world. He says, you make us nervous. He says, we're afraid that if we actually accidentally cater you or something like this, that you're going to go into one of those little napalm flashbacks, you're going to start suplexing us all over the place, headbutting us, and there's not a darn thing we can do about it. I laughed. And I just said, I'm here just like what you guys are. For. Maybe I don't engage in all the little chuckle me yuck yucks all the time, but I'm here for the exact same reason. But it made him relax at least.
You know, I'm sure that must have been a little tough trying to build rapport with the guys backstage, right?
Yeah, well, But at the same token, what made them nervous is because I've been around lots of people, and I know that in any kind of a company, that situation is good and bad. So even
right.
in the beginning, I rode by myself, I stayed by myself. When I'd be at the different venues, I kind of, there was always some type of cafeteria area, this big room that they would always take over, and all kinds of stuff would be taking place. I always would position myself just so, in a way that I could kind of sit back, I could kind of think of much what
right.
all was happening, because I'm definitely a people watcher. But then also, I always brought work with me. So I had my cell phone, I had my planner, and I just kept working on all the other projects. Because like I said, I was unrestricted. So I might come in early that day, I might do a seminar, or go teach a clinic or something like that early in the day, go to the building, around, do some work, then finally get in the match. Then afterwards, go do a sports bar or something like that. So I work for myself. And then just being under the contract with the WWF, I was a very limited contract. But
well, sir, that's
it. I'm going to have to wrap this up pretty quick. I'll be more happy to come in on another time, though. I need to get something done here about while I'm at the Sprint store, and I have to head on to my next destination.
All right. Well, Mr. Seven, if you want to plug or promote anything you got going on as you take your leave.
I have one more question. I'm sorry. This just is an opportunity that I get all the time. But I have to ask. So I'm not sure how old your daughter is, but if she is at the age where she has what she does show and tell or whatnot, or in the past, you know, she was able to do that, did she introduce you as the baddest man alive?
Well, okay, let me I do have two daughters. I have three sons, two daughters.
Oh, yeah.
And I would come into on my property in Coldwater, Michigan, I have a training facility. So a lot of times when I'm done teaching, as I'm walking back in the house, I barely walking into the door, and all of a sudden, my daughter would be saying, "Dad." I don't want to be dad at the point there. I just have to deal with people and stuff. I just teach it. I want to kind of be invisible and just, go get something to eat, go get something to drink, and just mellow on out for the evening. So she'll be like, "Dad, I would like you to meet so-and-so." And the young man would stand up and he'll extend his hand out and I would walk right past. Well, I won't even acknowledge it. Walk right past. Not shake his hand, nothing. Walk past him. See you later. I pull up the gallon of milk, take the cap right up the top, and I drink it right from the gallon jug. And as I'm wiping my mouth off with the back of my other hands, if I just, as I'm looking down, I'll be like, "Young man, I hope your intentions are admirable. I'd hate to see," and I look right up at him, "your face," as I'm pointing towards the jug, "appear on this jug as being missing." I said, and that's after they find enough of your body parts to know that it was you in the first place.
All right.
Did I lose you guys?
No, you did lose me for a second, but I came in right on the tail end of your story, which is pretty awesome. Thank you so much for answering my questions. You are clearly the man. I'm literally just getting off of doing my military drill. You're awesome, sir. And it was a pleasure talking with you today.
I'll tell you what, let's do this again, maybe another 3-4 months, something like that, and I can update you as to what I do now. But to answer your question before, if there's some of your listeners want to know more about me, just go to my website at dansevern.com. One more time, that's dansevern.com, and you can see all the different social medias, the Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff right there. I have a lot of things I have going on. I've always been busy, and I will continue to do so. But
that's awesome.
Thank you guys for having me on, and hopefully we'll do this again down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for your time today. It was a pleasure having you, and we look forward to the next time.
All right. Take care.
Well, Sign Guy, I'd like to say that mystery caller had a velvety voice. It was kind of like a foghorn to a sailor in trouble.
Well, I don't know if Sage will take that as a compliment or not, but I'm sure it was intended as such.
Oh, okay, yes. It was a compliment. Most foghorns are to a sailor in trouble, usually when they're having problems with navigation on a foggy night. Yes.
All right. Well, with that, I think we will wrap this up. It was a pleasure having Dan the Beast Severn on the show as our guest. Thanks to Sage for calling in to ask his questions as well. And we will be back with you Sunday afternoon. DeMarcus James making his first ever appearance on Turnbuckle Turmoil. I have no earthly idea why it's his first appearance, why we have never gotten him. But he'll be on Sunday afternoon. It's something, but he'll be on Sunday. Looking very forward to that. And we will be back with you Sunday. Next Friday afternoon, we will be continuing on with Dan Month, and we will have Danny Spitfire with us. So make plans to be with us then. We'll talk to you Sunday.